I'm indeed exceedingly happy to be with you, and I don't deserve any of the appellatives that have been hoisted on me. I always feel extremely ordinary, and I think that's where my happiness lies, because in India, to identify with the ordinary person has been my greatest source of strength. And I see the extraordinary in the ordinary always, and I feel that those whom we see as extraordinary often turn out to be less than what we expected. And I get my greatest happiness in identifying, therefore, the people I live and work with, who are people who are extremely important but who are not visible, who are thinkers, who are writers, who are poets, who are wonderful people, but who somehow don't seem to be on the radar of urban India at all, and especially of people who get focused in media. But I think they are wonderful people. So today we're talking about dissent, democracy, and moment of change. I'm also a student of English literature, by the way, though I've forgotten my literature in a manner of speaking, but it comes back to me at my moments of great need. And when I'm greatly troubled, I tend to read a lot of what I read when I was in my late teens and my early 20s. So nothing ever leaves you, and I read books, and they give me a lot of pleasure. I think it gives you food for thought always. So I'm very glad to be with people who have done literature, write books, who are interested in literature. I think it gives us a very important other dimension to the whole role of dissent. Because I don't think that in a society in which there is discrimination, always, and I don't think a day passes in my life where I don't see some kind of discrimination, and where there is so much of things that work against democracy, like he used words like insurgency, words like extremism, he used words like terrorism. So all these bogeys come in contact, and then it gets inverted into a kind of oppression on the role of dissent in democracy. So there's no way I think I can go through a day without thinking of dissent. But if I could talk about it in the context of recent events, I think the kind of polarization that has been presented in media, also in the minds of most people who have now suddenly become conscious of public action, there has been a black and white situation, and it's become a kind of Bushism. Either you're with us or you're against us. And dissent is much more nuanced. I think dissent is something in which you may have a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, or eighth position, as many more. And in a democracy, as plural as India, they accept that dissent will be also plural, that maybe some will not agree with the composition, some people may not agree with the principles, some people may not agree with the processes, some people may not agree with the finer details, some people may not agree with the final targets that are to be achieved. So I think one of the worst things that has happened in the last 10 months, I think, in terms of public education, is that dissent has been seen as negative. Last night, Nikhil and I were traveling from Pune to East Delhi this morning at 2 o'clock, and we were nabbed by a person who always wants to see how can you all get together and see the future. I feel like saying that the best thing we can do for India is to state different positions, so that choices are made in an informed manner. You don't necessarily have to be together to establish rationality. And in the Indian national movement, we had a fantastic example of people who differed so strongly with each other, coexisted in a manner, but didn't doubt intent. No one doubted the other of not wanting independence, though they disagreed with the means. Here we have an inverse situation where your intent itself is questioned. So I think that kind of dissent is very bad for democracy in another sense, leads to the kind of dissent that is created based on communal, on caste, on gender, and the myriad other issues, language, so many things, culture that is perpetrated in India. But I think politically speaking, what we need to do, and I think this is a word of caution for all of us, and we need to think very seriously about it, is what shape do we give this kind of dissent? We all appreciate, accept that there is a role for dissent, but we also have to formalize some kind of platforms for this, and that's a challenge to all of us. How do we create these platforms? What shape do these platforms take for public impression, public and public positions, public opinions, and without the threat of being beaten up or being pushed into a corner or even having police cases against you? So on the one hand you have Vinay, and the other hand you have a poor Dalit in Rajasthan who asked to see the NREJ accounts, all set upon by the system. So dissent, even in the minor cases of saying that NREJ money has not been spent properly, to saying that delivery has not taken place, are all seen as anti-national or anti-the state or anti-the system. So we really have a hell of a lot on our plate. But I really do think that dissent must have, must be given some kind of formal platform. But is it effective, or whether we are in the public gaze of the media or not, we have some place to talk, to exchange ideas, to formally set about setting up a vision. And I'm using the word formal because it's very important. One of the important fallouts of the recent debate on access to being part of a system and yet being only partially engaged with it has been a debate the NCPRI has taken a very serious interest in since the last 2 years on making all public policy open for public debate, not just for groups that identify themselves as people who claim the voice of the nation or the voice of a certain set of people or the voice of the poor or voice of the marginalized. We have various constituencies. But are we the sole representatives? So this is a big question hanging over all of us as to whether we can claim, except that we think we are doing what we think is right, and that we are open to dissent and we are open to criticism and we are open to change. But this is, so we feel that one of the things that we must take up for registering dissent in national policy and legislation is the transparency of the free legislative process. I'm saying the legislative process is sacrosanct, let it be with Parliament. We also believe that the systems of democracy must survive, that you must have a legislature, an executive, and a judiciary that perform, but perform well, and therefore there is an accountability system, and there is a system with which much of the evaluation should be with us. Though we don't want to damn that system, but let it become better, because the alternative to the disappearance of that system, so far as we are concerned, may be a fascist regime, may be an intolerant regime, it could be a military dictatorship, it could be anything. So democracy has to stay. Problem is, how do we make this imperfect and difficult democracy deliver? And that's a challenge to us. So this pre-legislative process, which is in a sense, inherent in the Right to Information Act, because under Section 4, it says all policy that pertains to people should be in the public domain. We must absolutely put it out for public viewing. So we are now trying to get something through. We are still debating what it should be, whether it should be a law, whether it should be a set of rules, what form it will take, so that every single citizen, every Indian, can interact with that policy and say what's wrong with that policy. So it is not claimed by any special group. I must confess that after the RTI won its way through and we got the national legislation, my extraordinary worry used to be a very, very mundane, babu-like concern about the papers. We generated so much paper that I felt that we owed it to the nation not to damage that paper, because it was the MKSS, I felt, property. So even a simple thing like that bothered all of us, that we should really leave it somewhere and the public can access it. It's now within our Nehru Memorial Library. We've left it there because we felt it might be eaten up by white ants, because we live in a mud house. They do read. Anything can happen because we don't keep things properly. So from there, all these things will be seen as national responses and national issues. And for that, we must also have the humility to see that we are only one variable in a set of many variables. And that gives you the acceptance of dissent. Movements for change. I think movements for change, am I exceeding my time? Movements for change must be tethered, I think, in stated principles and in some kind of stated ideology. See, though it is very good to have spontaneous movements happen, we've just come from Panchgani, where there was an international meeting and we met 10 Egyptians. So the Arab Spring was an important topic of discussion. Point is that now the way ahead is very confusing. There are all kinds of voices now coming up as to how it should go ahead. And it should be so. But I think one thing that they're struggling for is to get a common minimum agenda of principles and action so that the Arab Spring can go ahead. In India, any movement, our RTI movement, was tethered in two or three very important concepts. One was that it would be not only corruption but the arbitrary use of power. So you see the flip side. So you can't accept a person who's monetarily corruption-free, but who in his ideology or her ideology is discriminatory, is violent in the repression of voices, of expression, we would think that is also corruption. Introducing a policy which becomes the rule of law then becomes discriminatory, like we have so many repressive laws in India now, that's the rule of law. You have SEZ which is the rule of law. So the rule of law itself becomes a repression. So to prevent that, so that also we see as misuse of power. So unless we see misuse of power along with corruption, then we fall into the error of looking at people who may profess and actually be honest, but who need not necessarily be just. So we have to have justice, equality, and access along with a very narrow definition of corruption as the money and misuse of money. Movements for change, we are being glorified. One of the problems with us is our self-righteousness. I had a brother who died, who always used to say to me, younger than I, who always used to say to me, you all have the God complex. And I used to get very irritated. But it is true. Because we become self-righteous. To be principled and honest is one thing. To be self-righteous is quite another. To say, I am the only one who's right ever, you know, is wrong. I think must allow oneself the human space to make mistakes, to be wrong, to think badly or ill or negatively, because none of us has the capacity to be always right. So that humility is essential, and I think almost in all movements, because we are pushed into a corner and very often we have to make these strident comments. Even those who think like I do come out sounding very self-righteous. And those who don't think like that come out thinking that they are the only ones who can deliver and everything else is rotten, which is not true. So movements have to understand that they have to work from a space from which they look in dissent with themselves, not as a moral issue necessarily. It can be an issue of perception. It can be an issue of priority. It can also be an issue of where you are placed. Because very often we see things from where we are placed and they seem very different. It's like the exercises we do in training programs. Where you sit determines how you see the room, and therefore you see a perspective which is different in a very, very simple and minimalist way. So I do think that's extremely important. And the third thing is, of course, that movements must also understand that in the nature of things, our movements have a rise and fall. And it is, I always used to wonder when we had the Right to Information campaign, Nikhil and I often discussed how long will be the Right to Information be the target of the whims and fancies of a people, and how soon will they tire of it and go back to something else, which is more glamorous. So it is ultimately the people who stick to it and fight and who are therefore to deal with the plurality and the complexity of it who last out. Therefore, ultimately, you have to have a much more mature understanding of our own limitations and other people's virtues and their skills and gifts. RTI was able to tap the best of people across all sectors. I think I may be wrong. There were many who were left out, but still, the judiciary, the best in the judiciary joined us, which we could meet or discuss it with. Journalism joined us, journalists joined us, editors joined us, poor people joined us. Of course, it began with poor people's protests from a peasant and workers, desire to know more information and be transparent. Women's groups joined us. So at the end of the first dharna, when we sat in Biawar for 40 days, we already had 400 people sign up of different kinds, including middle class groups that just came to see Bhajan. And they came and said, oh, you know, we want to join you because you're saying something that you believe in. And they came and sang Bhajan and they gave us all flowers and went away. So we had speakers join us, set the floor on which we were sitting. They joined us. Young children were child laborers who heard us, joined us. So it was kind of from everywhere. And I think a composition of a movement should be plural. It cannot therefore be exclusive. And we must take that as a principle. And I think, of course, a country that has been at the receiving end of so many communal and tensions of discrimination, whether Dalit or women, we have to be over-cautious about what we say. Now, some kinds of statements are worried me. That the people should have their say. Look at the custom test. The people have their say. Do we want a custom test? People have had their say in many other places. So what should people's voices be tempered by? And can majoritarianism itself be legitimized? So that's why Tagore's famous song with Gandhiji also, like Akla Chalore, Jodi Tore Dakshune Kyo Na Aashe Tobi Akla Chalore. Song he made for Gandhiji when he went on the salt march, that even if people don't come with you, but if you think something is correct, proceed alone. So the lone voice may very often be more correct than a voice which draws thousands of people. So how do we discriminate between what is just and what is what draws a lot of people is an issue I think we have to discuss. I think I've run out of time, so I'll just stop here and maybe in conversation. Thank you.